I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, you're listening to the Alts in Our Stars podcast. My name is Chris Payne. I am a correspondent on Billboard.com. Do a lot of things. I write about rock and alternative and indie music, and probably my favorite thing to do these days is this podcast, so I am very glad you're listening to it. You are about to hear me talk about one of my most favorite subjects with someone who is also very passionate about that subject, and hey, it's emo music. It's pretty interesting how Tom and I talk about this. Most of the artists who we talk about, who we put under this tag of emo music, they do not want to be called emo. We talk about that and a lot of other interesting things. Tom Mullen runs a website, a Twitter, a podcast, a DJ night, a lot of things under the name Washed Up Emo, but he's not at all washed up. He's a very intelligent person. He and I both share a lot of feelings on this podcast. There's some excitement, there's some anger, there's some passion. You're going to get a lot of feelings coming at you, which I hope you enjoy. So, yeah, here it is. Alt in Our Stars podcast, Washed Up Emo Edition. Enjoy. Yeah, so I am excited for this. I'm excited to see where this goes because I am very much a fan of your podcast, Washed Up Emo. I enjoy discussing these things with other people who are passionate about them. And I think within fandom, there's lots of different areas of fandom that can be brought out of like eras and different sides of emo and pop punk and whatnot, different, you know, perspectives. Mm-hmm. Hoping we have some interlocking but also differing perspectives.
Oh no, I think so. Even your age, I'm sure that, you know, your age is different in where you came up, and yeah, definitely. So I think I'll be more than happy to debate.
Totally. Yeah. So to start off, tell me how, in a nutshell, how you started with Washed Up Emo and what that's all about.
So it started in 2007. I was working at Equal Vision Records, which is a hardcore label in upstate New York. I had a lot of time on my hands. There's not a lot going on up there. And I was really frustrated with what was happening in the mainstream media about the word emo. And no one was talking about Sunny Day Real Estate. No one was talking about Elliot or any of these bands. It sort of meant a lot to me when that word was sort of becoming itself. And I started a website, and I look back at some of the posts. They are absolutely hilarious. I was so angry. I was like posting stuff from the UK. The UK is absolutely horrendous with understanding genres. I make fun of them all the time. Kerrang magazine, all those places. They have no idea. So it was really easy fodder.
Yeah.
So I was basically frustrated at the era of eyeliner, white belts, neon tank tops. That stuff was, I did not think, people were saying the word and it wasn't what I was doing. So the site early on was about talking about the older bands.
It seems like an angry site. Early is passionate.
Early was angry, definitely.
Okay,
angry.
So you'll say, I was going to tone it down and say passionate, no, but if you want to say angry, we'll go with angry.
I was totally angry early on because these 2007, 2008, it really was, no one was talking about it. Zero. And then around 2009, Someone emailed me and said, did you know that there's a band in Russia that sounds like Mineral? Get out of here. No one. No way. No one paid attention to that. Come to find out, the internet, obviously, you know, people were able to find out about these bands, either YouTube or sharing services. It somehow leapfrogged that genre, and these younger kids were starting to play older bands or inspired by some older stuff. Philadelphia was a huge scene, Knowing, Algernon Cadwallader, these bands in 2009, 2010. That's when I got excited and started to really find that, wow, these kids are actually remembering the older stuff. And so it kind of expanded from there to a podcast, a web, you know, a couple other websites. That was sort of the minute and a half version of Washed Up Emo. And in addition to working full time at other jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember 2007, 2008, those years well, when the cash cow of what people were calling emo, which, you know, could have been more pop punk or more just like metal or pop rock, whatever you want to call it, that sort of stuff was very much in the mainstream, getting attention. It was a bankable thing for major labels and brands and whatnot. So yeah, it makes sense that was kind of like a ground zero, like a year zero for any kind of reference back to like the 90s emo.
I mean, no one was talking. Yeah. No one was saying a word about Mineral. And now it is. Now if it's a tour and it's a band now, they might reference a band from the mid-2000s, but then also the late 90s. I mean, there's this understanding of the whole history, and that's my goal, is that if you like My Chemical Romance or you like All Time Low, whatever those bands are in that time period, look back and look where they came from and their favorite bands, but look ahead. Look at a band that's maybe inspired by that band and an older band. I think you need to have the whole breadth. If you're just focusing on one couple years or 3 or 4 years, that tells me that it was a phase for you. You're obviously into pop music now, and that was only a time period for you. And if that was fantastic and that those bands hit that time period.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't and you're actually a huge fan of that time period, look back or look forward. If there's a thesis or a mantra, that's what it's been. It's been learn about the history regardless of where you came in. And it's been really fun to every outlet I've had, it's been that mentality. It's gone away from angry. I get angry at times. There'll be times where things set me off, but for the most part, it's been that education part, which I love.
Mm. And you know what? I'm thinking back to like when I was maybe like 2004, 2005, 2006, when I was like early, really starting to get into this kind of music, and I would really enjoy the way that like Alt Press or AbsolutePunk.net covered these artists. But a lot of times, because I also read like Spin and Blender was a thing then, Magazine, and they would cover it. But a lot of times when these more like mainstream publications covered like Fall Out Boy or My Chemical Romance or smaller acts in that scene, it would just fall into all these cliches and I would just get so frustrated because it would just be talking about like eyeliner or like tight pants or like...
They were pulling these things that any other tabloid would do today for a celebrity. If it's Kardashians or anything, they're pulling out those same things. You're exactly right. It would be the Cosmo article about emo. And
yeah.
It would be completely derivative and away from music and just... And I get that that happens and it's frustrating because you would hope that they would at least think about it. All press would. They had the history. They probably reviewed the first X band's record and had the context. But when it got big, it just got diluted. And that's what was, I'm sure. I mean, where were you growing up in those years?
04? In central New Jersey.
Okay, so you were right in the mix.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You were probably at those early Bamboozles. I'm sure I handed you a CD at the EVR tent. Those years, if it was Armor for Sleep stuff, like that was right then.
Yeah, what I got into it, the band that just was my gateway for me, I was never even just like a big music fan period before getting into the emo and pop punk stuff. What got me into it was hearing The Middle on the radio when that was really big. Bleed American was the first like actual album I spent my own money on.
Nice.
And from there that just turned into like, oh, there's actually these other bands who are kind of like Jimmy Eat World, but wow, these are way off my radar. And it just like all went from there. And in the high school where I went to, this was like freshman, more sophomore year, there were, I became friends with a bunch of people who were really into the same kind of stuff, and it went from there.
I mean, that's where it starts. You have that community and that first record. I think that's fantastic. I sometimes say pre-Bleed American, post-Bleed American, because that was such a huge turning point. That record, that band had the cred. They had the records before. They had Clarity. They had Static Prevails. They were a pop punk band on their first record, 1, 2, 3, 4. Jimmy Eat World is a pop punk band. If you listen to the first record, not Static, but their first official release. So that was a pop punk record. And for them to make this amazing record, funny story about that record is the A&R guy at the label I was working for handed me the promo CD of it. It was sent by the band, because I don't know if you remember the story, but they sent it to every single label and everyone said no.
For Bleed American.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's from the management company, and I had it, and the A&R guy goes, here you go. You like them. Take this. I was like, holy shit. This is the first Jimmy Eat World record? Or this is the Jimmy Eat World record? Oh, my God. So I listened to it, and I'm like, this thing's chock full of hits.
Right?
And I went, so
it's always fascinating me how they went from Clarity to that. It's just such a – and they were on their own just recording it.
Yeah.
They were with no label, and it's – goes from this masterpiece that's so expansive with maybe like one potential hit on it to an album that you say is full of hits.
So the funny part is I went down to the product manager that knew that I was a fan. I was actually just looking at this poster. It was around their $2 bill show for MTV2. Used to have these shows that were $2. And I remember it was around the same time. And he was like, oh, Tom, your little emo bands, this is going to do 60,000 and you're going to see him at Irving and blah, blah, blah. And I wrote an article for Cornerstone's like pre-Fader blog about how one day I'm going to see them at an arena, or one day I'm going to see them at a big show. And it was about that record. And I mean, lo and behold, the thing took off. And it was such a great feeling, because I felt that at that point, bands that were friends or were related to Jimmy Eat World were going to get big too. That didn't happen.
I mean,
you know, Boys Life
and
Mineral and those bands that they toured with, and their sort of Christy Front Drive, like those guys did not get pulled into that. Some broke up, some obviously changes, but it was cool because at least one band got through.
Yeah.
From that older
era. Yeah. But you know, it seems like it wasn't necessarily because those bands didn't want to. Because I remember hearing the story of how Jimmy Eat World how Capitol got turned on to them was because they were trying to sign Christy Front Drive and they weren't interested, but it was a 7-inch and Jimmy World was on the other side. So like they were trying to sign others. And like I think the Get Up Kids maybe had offers to go major, but they didn't want to. But it was like Jimmy decided when they were kids to go with Capitol, which like probably they got shit for that back then.
A little bit, but I think at that time they had enough, I think, based on the community that I was in and people talking about them, they had such a great, like, they did the VFW tours. They did the shitty places and playing for nobody. Like, they did it. So I think they had the connections, too, within the scene. It wasn't like their parents bought them all their amps at Guitar Center and a van, which I had seen in the mid-2000s. Those parents just funding everything, and they had no community behind them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when any city you go to, you've got friends that you could stay with, and that's how you survived. Those early bands, they had that community already, so it was built in. It was fantastic for them. I was so happy for them at that time, being popular and getting big and seeing a band that I grew up loving on the radio. It was crazy. I still get excited when I hear it. I don't drive anymore, but like when I'm in LA or something and it comes on the radio, I'm like, oh, this sounds fucking rad.
Yeah.
it's like some little insurgent got in and like got on the radio.
God, I feel like this could just turn into the Jimmy Eat World podcast.
Sorry, Jim.
The Jimmy Eat World worship hour. Wanted to touch on comparing the quote revival right now to the mid-2000s. So we're there now talking about the mid-2000s. So we might as well touch on that, because you were saying you see this difference where it's sort of like you think the bands then, some of them, lusted after this mainstream thing, but you don't think that's happening anymore.
With some of the bands in the revival now?
Now, like, you don't really think that there's any kind of, like, lust for mainstream, really. But you saw it back then.
I think I did. I saw... Now I'm sure there's bands that... I mean, there's amazing bands right now that are getting popular based on music and based on looks or whatever it is. Those things all happen in every genre. But what was interesting about the revival now, that this is the 2010s, not necessarily the revival of the 90s, if I'm making it clear enough. They're sounding like the late 90s or the early 2000s. Or maybe they're taking from all, but at least had something. There was this sense of community to it. If it was Top Shelf Records early on, or God, why am I blanking on all the labels? Like all those sort of earlier like bands, those guys had a community built. And I remember meeting some of the guys from those labels and saying, you guys remind me of those labels back in the day. That there was a community base to it, and there was this sort of element of we're going to help each other out. And when I was involved in the mid-2000s, and I just saw this commercialization, and I was in it. I was at a label. I was at a hardcore punk label that was trying to break bands.
This is Equal Vision.
And I was working bands like, if it was Circus Survive, Fall of Troy, Armor for Sleep, I was in it. A lot of the bands, I remember, if it was on these tours, it was like that. It was like, I'd never heard of them. They had, you know, stacks, Marshall stacks, brand new equipment, you know, a van, and there was no substance to it. No one's talking about those bands anymore. And I think from the MTVs, from the Fuses, those bands really tried to break. And that happens. It was just really funny that it was coming on the end of a trend that was sort of really independent-minded.
Yeah.
And that's what really turned me off on a lot of them. There were great bands in that era. We can talk about 500 of them that I loved. But it was this... I just remember seeing that era being like, we gotta fucking make it, man. And I was like, come on, play music first.
Yeah.
Love it, then go. The Crabcore era, you know, that was unbelievable. That was there for a minute. Broken Side, who, you know, I guess has a new song out. That's some reason in my brain, which I needed to leave soon. They have a song. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, everything's cyclical. Not everyone's going to talk about Mineral forever, but that time period it was like sugary, way too sugary for me. Now, your side, you were in it and younger and impressionable at that time. So it's a different experience.
Yeah, I mean.
Because it was new.
Yeah, I mean, even by like 07, 08 especially, I was really starting to kind of, because by then I was in college and I was starting to just feel kind of awkward being into that stuff because I didn't really connect with it genuinely anymore just because obviously of how it had gotten to just like look at the bands and how they were dressing. I didn't really connect with it anymore. And it was just like a lot of younger kids at shows. And I was like, I was at my college radio station then. So I was more into this mindset of like being into indie rock and trying to just being very, I was very self-conscious about being into that music in the past. And I was really in a lot of ways like trying to cover my tracks and be like, oh, I'm not part of this.
What's interesting about that comment is that it's so many people from that, people I've spoken to say the same thing. It was, even people that go to some of the DJ nights are like, God, man, I remember back then for 2 years when I was crazy, or I kind of listened to it, but not anymore. And a lot of the articles were like, hey, remember when you felt weird about your thing and you've moved on? Well, remember this. And it's interesting that that happens for that time period. It also happened in the 90s. You know, Promise Ring ran away from the word. Those bands, I mean, even after it broke, they were running away further. No one's ever wanted to be associated with this word, no matter what. Even you. You were like, I didn't do that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, God, like I remember, but then I came back to it. It's not like I was coming back to Broken Side. I was coming back to like being more open about, yeah, I really, really enjoy Fall Out Boy and Paramore. It was more just like coming to terms with that. And I think also being either late college or out of college, being more mature, being able to have that worldview of being older, like, yeah, I can accept I was into a lot of...
Or but something. At that time, you were like, wait a minute, this has moved on. But that's what that mean. It was like this moment where I'm sure everyone in your high school was into those, or were into those bands. Like the popular kids, it wasn't, you know, for me growing up, I'm not going to date myself, so I'm not going to mention any bands, but whatever the pop group was, that's what everyone was into. That's what everyone was into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yo, my high school was weird. I mean,
high school was already weird.
Yeah, like for me, this stuff, it was kind of a culture shock. A very minor one, but a culture shock when I went away to college, still in New Jersey, but in a different part of New Jersey. Because, like, where I went to high school, you'd have, like, preppy kids wearing Matchbook Romance shirts, like, being into that stuff.
Like, that's what I mean by it hit another level.
Yeah.
It wasn't us wearing our, you know, hardcore shirts and, you know, being into, like, metal labels. Like, those kids weren't wearing those shirts and those labels. This hit a different level, and it was great for those bands, but again, it took that word to a different world. And maybe those people were in it for a couple years, but it's really interesting to see there's like a 4-year period where it just got crazy. And that's when I started it. Like, it was I couldn't take it.
where did you grow up?
I grew up in Vermont. So I got into, I didn't know what, like, I'd never seen an arena tour or a big show. I had only gone to hardcore, indie rock, and punk shows at...
In Vermont.
Yeah. I think the biggest show I'd seen right before I went to college, I saw Rage Against the Machine in Montreal. That blew my mind. But other than that, it was hardcore shows. So Sick of It All was like a big band to me.
Okay.
So that I wasn't exposed to at that time.
Yeah, that's really interesting because so often when I talk to people who are fans of this, Jersey comes up a lot, Long Island, the tri-state area, Florida, Southern California, and maybe Chicago. It was like very centered in a few states. So you spent like your whole childhood in Vermont and got into this music a lot there.
Yeah, and I mean, it started as metal. I was into metal, got into hardcore, you know, Victory Records, Equal Vision, got into post-hardcore, Quicksand kind of stuff, and then it went into emo, and then I was getting into Get Up Kids and that kind of stuff in 95, 96, and then, or 96, I guess, and then going back and learning about Rites of Spring or Embrace, and then I went to college. So 96 to 2000 was when I was in college, and that was nuts then.
Because that basically is like those core years of second wave or third.
It's so funny when I post a wave anything online, people just berate me. Like, well, if you think about it, the third wave was. I'm like, oh my god, enough. So whichever wave you think is right,
very affirming. So basically, it was when like the Get Up Kids were starting. So like around the time Promise Ring was starting, around that.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I saw Jimmy Eat World, they opened for Promise Ring, and it was $3. That's the first time I saw them, and that's kind of the Promise Ring were like guys that kind of went out before everybody else, and they were doing it just a couple years before. Raina Maria taught a lot of bands how to do stuff on the road and took people. It's really cool, like that community part. And the thing that's different is that in this genre in that time period was the internet, so. Up until that time, I mean, if my freshman year in college, I checked my email once a day at a lab. That's what I did. I went to the computer lab and I checked it once and that was it. That's what you kind of, I mean, Jim tells on a podcast I did with him. I mean, he'd drive to a town, find a payphone, call the kid, his mom picks up, and they tell him directions on where to go to the show. It's that kind of, but the part of it was is that there was so much direct connection between people. I love looking back at shows, of pictures of shows back then. No cameras, no phones. Yes, people were still antisocial and probably connected with your own clique, but there wasn't this connection online. You know, we met online. We emailed back and forth. We probably would have met at a show.
Yeah.
And had this more deeper connection. And I think that's what I love about that time period. There was this deep connection between people and bands that I think I saw again in the emo revival, that those people were connecting that way. roundabout answer, but I feel like that's what was so special about that time.
Yeah. And it is sort of like a happy medium too, because the internet, like we were saying, it was there.
It wasn't
governing everything. It wasn't like it is now. It was just sort of there as like a small help.
It was a message board.
Yeah.
That's how you found about shows. It wasn't like you'd get to go to Alt Punk and Alt Press or whatever it was and see, or Absu Punk, sorry, and see everything going on. It was, you really had to dig. You had to work. I put a Saves the Day show on at the pizza place I worked at in college. It was my senior year. Saves the Day were coming touring, and I emailed the label and I said, hey, I see an off day. Can they come and play? They're like, hang on, let me go check, blah, blah, blah. All right. Where are you booking it? Oh, the pizza place I work at. They're like, are you kidding me? Guess the promotion we did. Guess what the only thing we did. We did one thing, and we sold out the venue. 250 kids. We did one thing. Think of the late 90s. Think no Facebook invites.
Does this involve Friendster?
Friendster wasn't around.
No, yeah, you're right.
It's not even the internet. I'll give you another hint.
Even the internet. I mean, does it involve a zine or just
something
paper? Yeah, paper flyers.
We fired one show. That's all we did. We brought 100 flyers to this one show, passed them out. 250 kids showed up. We didn't worry. It was nuts.
So people paid attention to flyers back then because you needed the flyers.
Word of mouth. It was that direct connection of, I got one. Hey, Chris, did you see Saves the Day's playing, blah, blah, blah. No, and then it just, so it was again, that direct connection.
Yeah.
And maybe we were dumb. Maybe we should have used whatever the internet was at that time, but that's all we felt we needed to do.
The internet took forever at that time. You didn't have like 50, I mean, I know how much.
How many notifications are on our phone right now while it's in airplane mode?
Yeah. Like I knew how long it took to actually like load text back then. Imagine loading like the graphic of a flyer on the internet then.
Yeah. So it's just that I loved that. And that's what was so special to me, was that direct feeling of, you know, you worked at it. You found out about the show and you were there. And that next week, you're like, wait, you weren't there? I didn't know about it, because you weren't in it. Mm-hmm. You weren't in the know. I joke about another podcast that I did. I said, if you don't know where the basement show is, you don't know the scene. Like, there's always a basement show going on. There's always kids doing something new now. That's what's next. And that's what's exciting. And that's what I love, kind of, that there's always that happening.
Yeah.
Even now. Mm-hmm. With all the crap and notifications we probably have on our phones right now.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting now with the bands that we would place in the revival, how much they are involved or stay involved with a scene on that low of like a DIY level, with like knowing where the basement shows are, like you're saying, because once bands start to like get on bigger shows, reach like higher levels on this like ladder of popularity, it can be more difficult to stay in touch with that side.
Yeah, I think a lot of bands, it's hard. You see the changes. I saw it with bands that I worked personally at the labels. You just saw the first time through on their shitty van that their mom let them borrow, to there's the tour bus, and there's them not giving me 5 minutes of time because I have to do all this work stuff, and they're busy. It's like, I was like, wow. Like, it's really interesting to see the trajectory. And some bands do well, and obviously that's why it's rock and roll, and that's why there's always going to be a behind-the-music type story for these bands, and go well or go bad.
These are the bands now, you're saying.
Yeah, it's always going to happen. It's great to see. I love a band that started really, really small, and, you know, it spreads, and people find out about them and keep going. That's the best thing.
Yeah, because I think it's really interesting.
Organically.
Yeah, yeah. Because we were just saying how when these bands like from the mid-2000s did it without setting up a grassroots fan base, just like getting mom and dad to pay for those amps and those new shiny guitars and showing up with like an album, they could have cashed in quickly. But when you don't have like a genuine fan base behind you, once that cash cow goes away, like now,
and those kids that were nothing. And not saying Matchbook Romance, but maybe they're wearing that X-Band shirt, they're done after 2 years. You didn't cultivate that connection with them. Maybe you did. Maybe there's a fan base for that band right now, X-Band X.
Mm-hmm.
There could be, but you did. There's this, if you just came out of nowhere, started playing the Ernie Ball stage on Warped Tour and kind of went that way and just tried it, there wasn't that heart in it. And maybe there was. Maybe they were genuinely super into that, but I think the majority weren't. The majority were just all about, I mean, this is what's happening. I want to get signed.
Yeah.
Why do you want to get signed to a major label in the first place or a label in the first place? Do it yourself first. I always tell bands that. I'm like, get leverage. Be really awesome way before someone comes and calls you. And then when you do, you have leverage to say, well, I have a 20,000 email list. I have this many people on this. Like, don't give me that crappy deal. I have, like, I can message. I have more power on my own. That's why bands are doing it on their own. They can. They have the fan base. They cultivated it.
Yeah, and, like, thinking about it, a lot of the bigger acts from the 90s, they've gotten back together. There aren't too many stragglers that have not reformed.
No, I mean, it's going to happen again. It's happening already. I mean, if Fall Out Boy was, what, 3 years? That wasn't even, you know, doesn't count as
yeah,
one.
Yeah, that
but
was
they
more
were,
of a hiatus. They didn't really...
They were
yeah,
a hiatus.
It was a hiatus.
So,
Blink Got Back was like 5 years.
Exactly. So there's these 5 and 10 sort of, wait a minute, wow, we've got kids now, we're doing this. You want to go out one more time? Go crazy, because what's great is I saw Maritime a few years ago, mm-hmm. and this was before Promise Ring got back together. And this Maritime is a couple guys from Promise Ring's band, which actually has more music than Promise Ring. They played a show, and this young kid kept yelling Red and Blue Jeans at them. And Davey is awesome about, like, sarcasm on stage. He's so funny. And I remember him, like, laughing through it. And after, I asked him, I was like, were you annoyed? And he said no. He said, I wasn't annoyed because at least that kid came. And at least he made the connection that this is Promise Ring Band, I'm going to go. And think of how stoked he is that they did those reunion shows. I'm sure he was at one of them. And so it's great, because kids never saw – I never saw Mineral. I missed them by, I think, 3 months. By the time they had played, when I was in school, they were already gone. So they – think of that.
Yeah.
So I love that a kid got to see Refused, or a kid got to see these bands. And even now, if it's Fall Out Boy, maybe they got into them 2 years ago and they got to see them now. Fantastic. That's cool. So I'm totally on board.
So talking about money, we're on a money talk. I feel like that's a good way to go into this Collect Records whole shenanigans.
Yes.
Yeah. So we should just do a synopsis for people listening of what happened. So Jeff Rickley, singer of United Nations and No Devotion, formerly Thursday, has an awesome label called Collect Records. He had a pretty sizable amount of money financially backed by this very wealthy, price gouging pharmaceutical dude. I don't even want to bring up his name into this. Who it was out of that he upped this AIDS medication. It was used for other things, but amongst them AIDS, upped the price by 5,000%. This information was out there that this guy was funding Collect Records label, which I couldn't. It's one of those stories where I had heard the story before Collect was involved in it, and I was like, oh, that's shitty. And then when it came around again and had Jeff Rickley's name in it, I was like, Twilight Zone, like, what's going on here?
Yeah, it's very. I knew the connection before.
Okay.
Like, I know that it was someone that was very wealthy and put a lot of money and mm-hmm. loved hardcore and loved punk rock, and he was a big fan. When I saw it, I was very surprised. I think, you know, Jeff and the folks that work there worked their ass off from nothing, kind of built it and had a great fan base and great bands. What was really, you know, hard is that, you know, I think Jeff, you know, he's worked so hard with all his bands, and I was just like, this for me, I was like, this is gonna be the for him to, like, go off and, like, have a blaze of glory, you know, like, this is gonna be it. And then to have this happen was so disheartening, to think that now he has to kind of rejigger and refigure out what's going on with the bands, with the labels. And it's another tough spot for them and for him.
And like, what happened in the end was that he seems like he was sort of undecided when it broke, but but the artists on his label were like 100% fuck this guy, as long as he's in any way involved, we're not part of this. So that kind of forced Jeff's hand. So basically, they obviously couldn't give back like the vans that he paid for. Yeah. But from that moment on, the money was cut, ties were severed. So now the future of the label is like, even though he's preserved, you know, something important, the future of the label is like, it's
a hard decision. I think there's a lot, we make those decisions, you know, there's those kind of big, we don't, but those big decisions where it's like, wait, I need to make a decision between, do I accept this money continuously to help what I'm doing so I can have food on the table and rent, or do I do it morally because I can't do it? And I'm sure that was really hard.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't think he knew the extent of it, but he knew that he was like a pharmaceutical dude with a lot of money. And it seems like you knew, like, in general what was like going on beforehand. But yeah, it's because in his written response he gave right after the news broke, he kept bringing up like capitalism and like, we're all in capitalism, and if you're gonna put out art, so much art that like is able to even reach an audience, guess what? It's funded by wealthy people.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what's crazy is, I mean, everything you're doing today, if it's watching CBS, that's owned by GE. You know, the food company that you bought, it's Unilever. I mean, it's, you can't get away from it. You can if you want, and but it's hard. And so I understand his point. I mean, I was making memes that night of, you know, I was taking Martin Gecko quotes from Wall Street. I made memes, you know, greed is good, which is a quote from that movie, and put a photo of him with a brand new shirt. You know, I mean, brand new, of course, gets more publicity because he was wearing the shirt in one of the photos that ever, you know, that's, yeah, they can pull, yeah, from Instagram before he makes it private. I cracked a joke and he favorited it before he shut down his Twitter account or privated it or made it private.
Jeff did.
No, the Martin guy.
Yeah,
it was.
Really?
I was cracking jokes and he like favorited one. The night that it broke, because that was before he was still on his yacht, probably fine, you know, wherever he was, but. Mm. That was before kind of things got real.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Yeah.
Did I just say that? Shit got real.
Yeah, it's like, if you were an artist on that label, how would you have reacted?
I would have been really upset. If it was, you know, if it was personal reasons toward why, and someone, you know, someone being sick or someone having issues like that and not being able to afford it, yeah, I'd be really pissed. I didn't grow up rich, not rich now. I think I would definitely have had second thoughts about working with the label or being connected to it because of that.
Okay, so you wouldn't have stuck with the label. You would have wanted Martin out.
I would have. Oh, definitely. I would have wanted him out.
Okay.
Yeah, if I was on a label.
Yeah, because it seems like. Although, like, regardless of how you felt, I think your hand is kind of forced in that situation, because it seems like if you chose to stay, you would have just been, like, ostracized, you know?
Yeah, I mean, not a great example or parallel, but Victory Records, for a certain amount of time, you know, they had really bad relations with a lot of bands publicly about not paying, about merch. And so if you were a band on Victory, it was sort of like a joke to say, well, you're never going to get paid. And I'm sure that they've fixed everything, or I'm sure whatever it is, there could be still lawsuits. I have no idea. But at that certain time, there was this stigma
Yeah.
So is there going to be a stigma then when you see Collect Records? Are you going to think of that guy, or are you going to think of the music? And a lot, for a long time period, people thought of Victory when it was, you know, not a hardcore thing, but more of a, wow, you're going to get screwed over if you sign with them.
Yeah. I mean, do you think we're even going to see Collect much longer?
I really hope so.
I mean, yeah, it's dope.
I think that to create something today in this environment, and how much noise and how many labels there are and Bandcamp accounts, and you and I could make a song right now and put it up. I mean, there's so much noise. And so for them to cut through and have meaningful bands and content, I hope that that continues.
Because, I mean, I'm sure it is very difficult to replace that money. But if nothing else, the story got so much publicity that maybe there are other very wealthy people out there who are good guys who want to step in because the story got such a big platform now, and be like, they want to be the savior who comes in. Maybe that conversation's already happening.
That's a really good point. You're right. Maybe it got more publicity for them to realize it. Oh, wow, I really like that band. Or maybe a major label or someone that's a bigger conglomerate, BMG or whatever it is, or another label brings them in as an imprint. Maybe those discussions are happening.
Because that would be such a feel-good follow-up to all the bad vibes, you know, which aren't like Jeff's fault or anything, but just that are still going to linger around because people are going to think of that guy, of Martin.
Yeah, it's such a weird – I like didn't believe it for the first hour, and then I'm like, oh, I think it's that guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a meme.
You were just making memes that night.
I was, actually.
So are there some times where, like – you're like, I'm needed here. I need to be making memes right now.
So
shit's happening.
So I've had instances where I've reacted wrongly to situations where I've been. I think Twitter is horrible for knee jerk reactions. Count to 10 and say, would my dad be okay with this, or would mom be okay with this
before you tweet?
Yeah, just like
mom and dad.
Yeah, because my dad follows me on everything, so I like go like, oh, is dad gonna be all right with that? Sometimes I've gotten really upset about certain things that have happened, or I feel like I need. That's, I mean, one of the shirts that I gave you is defend emo. I just feel like it. There's no one saying something that other people are thinking. I'm going to say it out loud.
Yeah.
And I'm going to hope that people understand that you can't do that. You can't say certain things a certain way. You can't do that. And sometimes I probably get too emotional because it means so much to me, that time period and that moment. And I hope, and again, it's continuing now. There's so many awesome bands today. Amazing. Like I'm more excited about the new stuff. If it's like Foxing, those guys came out of nowhere, and now they're getting offers like they can't turn offers away, or they can't tour as much as offers are coming in. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. That's great. I think there's 100 more that we could mention. That's what I love. Don't look down, 'cause
yeah, what are some of your favorite bands, like newer bands or albums out this year?
Great question. The Foxing coming up, that's coming out. I got a chance to hear it. The new one coming out is fantastic. The World is a Beautiful Place and I'm No Longer Afraid to Die. Fantastic band, stupid name.
well, I feel like they're not being 100% serious. There's some playfulness going on with that name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They are hilarious. I think those two are fantastic. I'm trying to think, Modern Baseball is fantastic. Who else? I'm blanking because it's the end of the day. If it's Top Shelf, if it's what's the other label? Why am I blanking on labels today? I am
so, Run for Cover, maybe?
Run for Cover, thank you.
Because they put out that Turnover album this year that I really loved.
Yes, thank you for mentioning Turnover.
Yeah.
Even though those dudes look like they walked off the beach and just rolled up.
I mean, they're
to the
from
venue.
Virginia Beach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Va Beach, va dude. I spent time there, so I can say that. They're amazing. That is like, I love shoegaze. I think it has a connection to you know, that world. That album's probably my favorite of the year.
Cool.
Thanks,
wow.
Thanks for remembering that. Yeah, that's probably my favorite record.
It was really neat interviewing them because I was talking to, I think, the bassist, and he's like 5 years older than me, and younger than me, and he was just saying how Saves the Day was such a profound influence on him. And I was like, wow. I mean, Saves the Day, I mean, when I got into them, it was kind of Looking Back, you know, because I wasn't like into Through Being Cool in 99 or anything like that. And I was like, wow, this kid is like 5 years or so behind me, and that has such a big impact on his band.
But it's so cool. And that brings up that point of being able to discover. I discovered by looking at a CD booklet, checking out what the bands thanked. And, oh, this band thanked mm-hmm. that band? I'm going to go check them out. Now it's 5 seconds and you're looking on YouTube and you're...
Or like, who are they tweeting with?
I would have loved it back then. I would have mm-hmm. been... I mean, you would have... I mean, I interviewed... I interviewed for the podcast Andrew from Brooklyn Vegan. And I was astounded at his knowledge from old stuff that was, like, better than me. I'm like, how do you know all this stuff? And he's like, Tom, the internet. Like, I just searched and mm-hmm. that's amazing. So for him, the guy in Turnover, to have that knowledge, like,
yeah.
that's fantastic. For the bands that, you know, you hope you bubble to the top.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're forgotten and you bring it back, your stuff to Guitar Center.
Yeah. from those bands by like 2009, 2010 that had bought it fresh in 2007, they were maybe turning it back by like 2010 at the latest.
Yeah.
the Guitar Center in like... I don't know, like I don't want to say Gainesville. It would probably be more like a metalcore place in Florida, a metalcore town. I don't think that's Gainesville.
No, probably south. I mean, Miami had a really good scene. There were a lot of bands back then that were hardcore bands that were fantastic. Cali.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun. But yeah, I think if anyone gets anything out of this, it's there's so many great music being made that's from the independent world that, yes, they're influenced by the 90s, but they're taking things from every era, and that's because they have the access to it, and it's really exciting to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, yo, I want to talk about Brand New.
Brand Nizzle.
Yeah, yo,
Brand... You can do no wrong.
M-E-N-E, is that pronounced Mean or Mene?
I just did that. I played it on my radio show.
Yeah.
I do a radio show on dashradio.com every Monday night, and I was, like, laughing through it, because I'm like... I'm going to get bastardized, or I'm going to get like yelled at either way.
Yeah, if you totally are. By Brand New fans?
Yeah, watch out. We have a joke at our DJ night that anytime there's a lull, all you have to do is play Brand New, and it's like back
yeah,
to normal.
You're back.
And I was never a huge fan of them back in the day. I just wasn't that into it. But for some reason, they can do no wrong.
So when like AbsolutePunk.net was making a post that, yo, Brand New added two new shirts to their merch site, you were like, can take it or leave it.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, okay, cool. I just kind of treated them as like the same kind of list of bands. But yeah, they have this amazing cult following, and
awesome. Yeah,
it's fantastic for them. I saw them in London, which was really cool. I happened to be in London at the time and got to see them perform. And really cool to see another country or another group of people like go crazy for this band. For them, they built it.
Yeah, and I saw them at Lala back in August, and man, I thought they killed it, and the crowd was really into it, and just it got me thinking that when you see bands from that era performing now, so often, as good as it could be, it's a nostalgic feeling, but I just got this feeling
that... It felt
new? Yeah, I mean, they opened with Mean, or we'll call it Mean, M-E-N-E.
We're going to do Mean today.
We're calling it Mean. Rhymes with meme. We're calling it Mean. They opened with that... They go through like their suites of albums. So they even like the Daisy tracks right after that were popping off. They played Deja in the middle, go back to a little bit of Your Favorite Weapon towards the end, then like Bring It Back Home. And I got this feeling from like the way the new stuff sounded, the way the crowd was, that they could like drop an album this year and it like really changed things and feel like really
mm-hmm.
I hate using the word relevant because it sounds so like but yeah, relevant.
Yeah, I think they're still doing it. They're still putting out music and playing and knowing what to do. They know that they need to play the new song first, play this from this record. They're smart about it. They know what they're doing.
I mean,
they're being mysterious and no interviews and fantastic. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, you could say that if they really knew what they were doing, they'd have a little bit more music. 'Cause you drop one song what was that, maybe February.
Yeah.
And still, like, no, I mean, and I get that these things take time, but, like, it has been a minute since Daisy was out. That was 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, do you think an album's coming, and, like, how do you feel about it?
I'm actually cool with them, you know. I guess I'm not. I'm still indifferent.
You're not the person, the super fan, I guess, is what.
I mean, the super fan's going to be like, oh my God, I hope it comes out tomorrow. You
know, which is like, basically what I just said. So you're not going to be super fanning with me on this right now.
I will super fan with you because I get that there's so many people passionate about them. And it's had me. I mean, it's been great doing the site because there's been bands that I've kind of been like, I could give two shits about. And then Brand New's one of them that kind of people reminded me, like, wait a minute, you should go back and listen to them. So it's been great as a community group of people reminding me specifically about Brand New. I've gotten into them again or learned more about them. Or I think it's that vein, too, where people sort of helping each other out. To think that I believed the self-centered of me. There was something I was trying to say, but then I choked on it. Now it's getting kind of late. We walked to the edge, but we never left. Seems to you when you disconnect. Written on the wall, letters plain and tall. This is my own fault. We don't feel anything. We don't feel anything.
It's like, for whoever their peers would have been back in the mid-2000s, I really don't know of maybe any others who I would feel this way about the possibility of them dropping an album right now. Not even like Jimmy Eat World. I'm so much more excited for like a Brand New album in the near future than what I think like a Jimmy Eat World album would be.
Yeah, it's interesting because they've been so mysterious. I think that's part of it. The other funny thing, I have debates about this all the time, is that who is the Pearl Jam of our era? Who is going to be still touring when we're 50 and 60? I don't know if you ever think about those things. I do. Like, what's that band?
Way in the future.
Yeah. Like, who's going to be that band that's still around and touring? Everyone can debate that's listening now and think about it. But I sometimes someone said Brand New. Like, is it going to be that band?
I don't think it would be them.
Someone thought, I mean, not saying arenas, but like, what's okay. that band that's going to continually be there for years and years and years and still kind of do. I don't know. It's a fun debate to think about because did you think Pearl Jam was going to still be around back then in the grunge? I didn't. You know, I thought it was going to be Nirvana or Soundgarden or something. But what's that band that's going to still be there?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, well, at first when you said Pearl Jam, I thought this was limited to artists of around that level, and I was like, well, with like emo and punk, there's only maybe like two or three. And
but
out of that,
no, but think about it that they're of those group of people when you mentioned like that subset of groups of bands in that era. Which one sticks around and stays? You know, and stays true to what they're doing, invents, still does things. Because they were, like you said, in the grunge era, there were a lot of bands. So what's that one from that era?
I mean, even on that big level, I could see it either being Fall Out Boy or Paramore.
Ugh. Sorry, I'm just joking. I had to get one in.
Yeah. Here, I'll dive in a little bit deeper in that because I'm not sure how much of that. I mean, do you like Fall Out Boy and Paramore? How much of that are you into?
I think a lot of their stuff. I think Paramore's has kept it closer to what they originally were doing,
okay.
But I think Fall Out Boy. I think it's turned into a complete pop band.
It's true.
And do they even have guitar? You know, on the songs, I'd be surprised to hear. It's gone so far removed, and bands can do that. You can do whatever you want. U2 has changed their sound a million times and changed, but. It's every time they get mentioned, every time it's touring, it's this mention of, oh, the emo band is back. I am sorry, that is not.
Or they'll call them pop punk.
Yeah.
And I mean, in a sense, like nominally, it makes sense because you're always going to be tied to what birthed you, like the scene that your lineage traces back to.
It's so far removed.
Yeah.
I do not see the connection to that band, to bands that maybe I was into or you were into from that era. I do not see the connection anymore.
Yeah.
Is the bass even plugged in? Like, does those... I'm serious. Like, what's the backing track? Like, you know, no one... When Patrick Stump toured, no one gave a rat's ass. I don't think there were many people at the shows I went to. I had a band on that tour. No one cared. So it's something about all of them together.
Yeah.
I just look, they can do whatever they want. I think they're missing their connection to what brought them up. They're into good music. I've read interviews. I've seen they get it. I just think it's so derivative of what they were doing. And if they want to continue, what their name? I was almost like, change the name.
Like, yeah,
you know, Fallout Men or something, like just
Fallout Men. You've grown. This you've is grown the up. Mature album, and you're gonna know it.
But it just seems, you know, it's like they got into a room, and I'm being really harsh now. I don't know why, but it's like they got into a room, and they're like, "How are we gonna get on the ESPN, you know, thing? All right, well, let's make a thing called Champions or whatever it was called." You know, I just feel like it was like they got into a boardroom and like figured it out. Like, and hats off to them. You figured it out. Hats off. Their management team, I know, they worked their ass off on it. It was too forced for me.
Okay. Yeah, and since...
There's the 2007 washed up emo.
Okay. It came out. We got it out. Here,
I'm done.
This, I think, might go in a little deeper on that. It was just the 10th anniversary of Panic at the Disco's first album. And also of Decadence, which is now called DCD2, and I did a big, long, like 4,000-word oral history on it for Billboard, where I spoke to Pete and
I miss that.
Brandon.
Can you send that to me?
Yeah, for sure. And one thing that I pulled out about it that I was like hoping would be touched on when I started it was how it really that album has really changed the way that bands and not just bands like artists try to break now, because they did basically what you were hating on like a few minutes ago, where they did none of the grassroots tour and build a fan base and like master our scene. They never played live. They just made a few songs on a garage band, put them onto Pete Wentz's his blog, and then
Is it Friends or Enemies, right? Was it Friends or Enemies, or was it the other thing?
This was, I think, before that. This was just like his live journal page. So Panic just like left it in a comment on Pete's live journal page, and he approached it like, oh, this is probably gonna suck, and he heard it and he was like, oh shit, this is awesome, and he just went out to Vegas and signed them, and it all went from there. Like they had played maybe like one or two shows before they were on like a big national tour and had their album coming on Fueled by Ramen Decadence. Mm-hmm. And that sort of changed the way, like before that the internet was it was a novel thing that the internet
they did
broke.
A new thing with it. Oh, yeah. For sure. No, yeah. They were taking advantage of that thing, and I think bands are doing that every day with if it's releasing something without noticing or anyone knowing or finding a new way to promote. Oh, that's awesome. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Fall Out Boy part was that the marketing angle, the we're going to do this and that. Maybe it was all in the heart and they were doing it because they loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I find it hard to believe, and, you know, that's just always been my stance. So
yeah, because like,
but you're right with Pan. I mean, it was different at the time, and it got noticed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was hard to break through, especially with the internet, because we didn't have it on our mobile phones. We didn't have mobile browsers. It wasn't email all the day. Still back then, it was pretty archaic.
Mm-hmm.
I think our phones texted, right? I mean, maybe browsers were pretty shitty. A lot of people had BlackBerry.
Yeah.
He's nodding at me because he doesn't remember because he was too young. It's fine. It's awkward for me. That's it. No one else.
Yeah, and I interviewed Matt Squire, the producer of the Panic record.
Mm-hmm.
And when we did the interview, he was talking to me about this artist he was producing that broke on Vine, and he was trying to make them into like a legit thing. And he was saying how, like, yeah, artists now, or it could even be comedy, they try to get an audience based off of these like little 8-second clips of whatever it is they do. They're not touring. They're not like playing live and like getting like a fan base on the road. They're just putting stuff on the internet and hoping people notice it. And like that in a lot of ways started with Panic. And I think that is sort of what influenced the artists we're talking about, who in 2007 just went out to Guitar Center, had their parents buy them amps and guitars, and they were making a record trying to make money.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, but that time was such a wild west too, with sites, and, you know, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy to make a site still. You really needed somebody or figuring out the domain. I mean, there was these steps that now are so easy that if you figured it out, if you were someone that had that know-how, you popped up, or you knew how to make a website.
Yeah.
You know, Jason Tate had that website a long time ago. He's I mean, it could have been anybody.
It's absolute for people listening. It's absolute punk. Yeah, that we're talking about.
It could have been you, Chris. I mean, you could have if you had learned or whatever and you figured it out. It was.
If only I knew how to code in 2004.
But that's what I'm saying.
You're
he
right
knew.
Though. Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That could have been. So people were taking those opportunities, and I think that's what was really fun about that time period when I was working. I was at Equal Vision from 04 to 07, and it was really fun because there were the traditional outlets of MTV and Fuse and those places, but then these bands were taking these risks and trying stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if you made it, I mean, it made an impact. It wasn't as noisy.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's definitely way too noisy now.
Yeah. But then again, you still see where there's sort of like these lines in the sand where certain gatekeepers won't really take on artists that have the word emo attached to them. And it's breaking down more and more. And I've seen it firsthand. I think a lot of it is just people like me graduating college and getting jobs in media.
Oh, no, it's the same thing.
That's what's happening.
No, we had a podcast a couple months ago about that where it's just there was this time period. I'm like, everyone's writing about emo. Let me reach out to all of them. Wow, they're all the same age. Or they're all from this certain
same part of the country.
Yeah, or just whatever it was.
There were trends.
Seeing all these correlations. I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. And it's cool. I mean, it's going to happen again, and people are writing about that stuff. I love it. I kind of love seeing those cyclical things that happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen again. It'll happen for this era in 10 years.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And do you think more pretentious are going to be broken down with people when they see, an emo band?
Everyone's going to run away from the word forever. No one I've ever interviewed has... people have said they liked it or they're okay with it. And maybe one or two that I can't remember off the top of my head that are okay with it. But for the most part, no one wants anything to do with it. The name itself, there's one person that's huge in the scene. Huge. Will never do the podcast because of the name. And it's
I'll mull that one over. Yeah.
And it's really funny to think like that is such a word that people get so... you know, bent out of shape about.
You need to call your podcast, open it to the alt in our stars. See, that's how I get the emo artists.
Hey, man, I made it.
Throw that alt out there.
Hey, man, I made it in 07 and I was angry. and I got the domain and that was it. Partly is this band emo was kind of the .com was sort of the way to kind of get people to joke about it, have fun with it, because it, playing off the word again to have people be more okay with it.
Yeah.
And have fun, but. Yeah, people will run away from the word forever. No one will want to be associated with it. And if they're, bands want to be, I get sent stuff every day. I get records, stuff, emails, band camp links every day. And so many of them are like, we're this genre / emo / scram / this. I'm like, holy crap. Like, it's people still want to be it, but then once you get to a certain point, you're like, oh, no, that wasn't me. We're a rock band.
Because then, it gets to that point where it's like you want to play like Lollapalooza or you want to be featured in like Rolling Stone or something. And like when I was at Lolla, talking about that Brand New set, I loved it, but there was not a single other band similar to Brand New there. And like I've covered, never Coachella, but Bonnaroo a couple years for Billboard. Like I go to a good amount of big A-list festivals and you'll see small indie artists there, but you wouldn't see like a top shelf band at these sorts of festivals.
But you might, and that's what I love, is that some of these bands and that this little like rung, someone's gonna have a record. People are calling the World Is record that it. I'm not.
You don't think it is?
No, I think it's amazing. I don't think as a Bleed American type thing. I'm not saying pop, but I'm just saying gets out there. People start noticing it. I don't see that record. It's interesting. What band is going to come out and have that record that changes things? It's really exciting. It hasn't happened yet.
Do you think the band exists now? Or do you think there's a band around now that could do that?
I think there's a band around. I don't want to predict. I don't put any on.
You don't want to put pressure.
I don't put pressure or stick my neck out and have people yell at me that I didn't call it. But there is a band out there that I think is going to come and have a record that will change things in this scene again. And it's exciting to think about that. Each time I open up my email and I click play on a band that sends me a song, I get excited every time because I think it might happen.
Yeah.
And that's like the biggest enjoyment out of all of this is that people are making music and they're excited about a time period that I thought was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's thankfully not, thanks to the internet. Thanks, Zuckerberg.
I feel like that's a good note to end on.
I always thank Zuck.
Always gotta thank the gatekeepers at the end of the day.
Thank you for making me have to pay for people to see the news that I post on my blog.
There's tiny worlds inside your mind. Your fingers are a distant sky.
So that concludes another episode of the Alt in Our Stars podcast. If you enjoyed it and you want to subscribe, you totally should. You can go to the iTunes link towards the bottom of the story and take it from there. There's also archived episodes, lots of fun stuff. Probably a good amount of bands that are emo that I've interviewed on this podcast before. Probably they wouldn't identify as emo, but that's all right. Lots of good stuff there. And also, if you're not viewing this on the Billboard website, you can still subscribe by just searching for Alt in Our Stars on iTunes. And as always, a new episode pops up every Friday at 1 p.m. on billboards.com. So until next week, have a good weekend, guys. Peace out.